All right, this morning we'll start off in Colossians. Colossians 3. Read the first four verses to get underway this morning. Colossians 3, we'll start in verse 1. If ye then being risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above and not on things of this earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. Let's ask the Lord to bless his Father. We thank you for allowing us to be here this morning, and we appreciate a church like this to come to. We ask that you would please move amongst us and be comfortable in everything that's going to be said. Pray that you would guide things that should or should not be said. And I pray that these words would be plain and simple, and that anyone who's here would be able to grasp exactly what your word is saying. Pray that you would bless those who are out of town. Pray that you get them back to us safely. But I ask that you be with us here as we learn something from your word this morning, and pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. I've heard it said that one of the hardest things in life, or two of the hardest things in life, one being where the Bible says, looking unto Jesus, who is the author and finisher of our faith. That's one of the hardest things you can do, is look unto Jesus. The other thing is going to be to set your affection on things above and not on things of the earth. And the reason why those are so difficult is because of how attractive this world can be and how attractive your flesh thinks this world can be. And so I want to talk about our affection this morning, because in verse 2 it says to set your affection on things above and not on things of this earth. So that must mean that there is some sort of affection that people have down here that is a distraction and a waste of time to you having your affection on things that you should have them on. And the first thing I want to say about that, we're going to jump right into it, but this should go without saying, but nowadays you have to say it, it's your affection to set. No one else can make you have a certain affection towards something or someone. They can control or try to control a lot of things, but they can't reach down into your heart and make you have some sort of affection. They can maybe tweak your emotions and have a role on that. That's one thing. But they can't reach down in your heart and tell you to have a love or an affection towards something or not to have it towards something. So an affection is something that is completely yours. It's completely up to you what you have your affection on. And a lot of times you get this mentality of, no, it's just my personality. This is what I'm naturally drawn to. Okay, that may be true, but you are in control of what your affection lies on. And we'll see that in a little bit. But I want to just say that it is yours to control. You are responsible. No man can determine to you what you love. No man can make a woman fall in love with him. It's impossible. That's not how you and your wife got married. It's something that you on your own have to decide whether or not you love someone or whether or not you have affection towards someone. And no matter how much you try to browbeat them into love me, you can't. It's something that you on your own have to submit. And so when he says set your affection, that indicates that it's something that you're going to have to work at, and it's a decision. It's a conscious decision that you're going to have to strive for. It's not something that just naturally comes out of you just trying to love God, and we'll see that in a little bit. The love that you have for anything that you have, some affection that you have, it could be for your wife, your children, your dog, hopefully not a cat, but the affection that you have towards something, no circumstance can change that. And no matter what happens, if the house burns down tomorrow, that doesn't change what you love. It's not affected by circumstances. It doesn't matter, who's running where and who's in control of what. Your affection is going to stay the same until you change it. So nothing that happens around you affects that. If your affections change, it's because you change them. Or it's if you have the Lord help you to change those affections. But I just want to just nail down that it is yours to control. No one can control it for you, and you have to make a conscious effort, to control that. Now let's go to Exodus 32. Exodus 32, and this is where Moses goes up on the mount and he's getting the Ten Commandments from the Lord. You guys know what happens while he's up there, but let's read through a little bit of this. Let's go down toward the middle of the chapter. Let's start in verse 19. Exodus 32, 19. And it came to pass as soon as he came nigh unto the camp, this is Moses coming down from the mountain, that he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses' anger was waxed hot. And he cast the tables out of his hands and brake them beneath the mount. And he took the calf which they had made and burned it with fire and ground it to powder and strawed it upon the water and made the children of Israel drink of it. And Moses said unto Aaron, what did this people unto thee that thou hast brought so great a sin upon them? And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord wax hot. Thou knowest the people, that they were set on mischief. But they said unto me, make us gods which shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what is become of him. And I said unto them, whosoever hath any gold, let them break it off. So they gave it me. Then I cast it into the fire, and there came out this calf. Abracadabra. Everyone give me your gold. And I just threw it in this pot, and I have no idea what happened, but there just must be some magic in the air, because and out came this calf. Is that what happened? No, it's the oldest game in the book. It's the blame game. It's all the way back to Adam and Eve. It's not my fault. It's the people that thou brought us out of the land of Egypt. They told me to do it. So all I did was take their gold, and poof, out came this calf. I'm just a product of what people have done to me. My affections have nothing to do with me. It's all this stuff that has happened to me, and boom, out came this calf. I was just worshiping this idol, not even knowing what I was doing. Look back earlier in the chapter at verse 4. And he received them of their hands, this is Aaron, and fashioned it with a graving tool. Aaron is going by, and he out comes this molten thing of gold, and he takes the graving tool, and he's etching it in. He's polishing the hooves of the calf, and he's making these horns, and he's decorating it and polishing it and refining it with his efforts into it. He is solely responsible for graving that calf. It's not the people's fault. Number one, you're in charge, but number two, you literally took a graving tool, and you carved, and you etched it out. Your personality, your flaws, whatever you want to call them, what your heart is set on, is not something just a byproduct of what people have done to you. It's something that you took and over time has molten into this thing, and you made it into the calf. You took the graving tool and you worked on it, and every etch in that calf was because Aaron put it there. So it's not some byproduct by which the people made him do something. This is something that Aaron, because of the lack of love and affection for the Lord, there's an empty spot when you don't have somewhere to put your affection, and he takes this gold and he takes a graving tool and creates this calf. He puts energy and time into that. This is something that he handcrafted. You can't blame it on anyone. You can't blame it on the people that gave you the gold. You're the one that took the graving tool and etched your flaws and your failures. You're the one responsible for what you're serving this morning. And so he took that graving tool and he did that, and it's entirely up to him. So your affections are completely your own. You can't blame it on anyone else. So what you love and what you hate is not a byproduct. It's what you have put into it. Let's go to Matthew chapter 6. And I touched on it briefly, but part of the reason I think that those Israelites did that is because mankind is made with a void that needs to be filled with some sort of affection. And there's a natural affection that the Bible talks about with a mother and her child or a husband and a wife that is filled. You take that away, there's this void that needs to be filled with something. And so if you don't have anywhere to shower your affection, there's this empty void. So Moses goes up on the mountain. The Israelites and Aaron don't have a personal relationship with that God. And all of a sudden, there's this void that is taken out. Well, we need to fill it with something. And so instead, they fill it with the golden calf. And so the second thing I want to say is that affection is a necessity. You can't just go without affection. You're going to love something. It's just a matter of what you love. And if you don't love the Lord, guess what? There's a void in there that is going to be filled with something else. Matthew 6, verse 24. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Now, I've said this before from this pulpit, but that's not just saying that, you know, you're going to serve God, but if you don't serve God, you're going to serve mammon. That's saying that you will serve someone, though. It's not just an either or. It's that you are going to serve someone. By default, if you're not serving God, you are serving mammon. You're going to serve yourself or this world. But that service and that love, it's connected with love. He said you will either hate the one and love the other. That love is a necessity. You need that. And no man or woman on this face of this earth is without affection. Now, they may have an affection, a perverted and vile affection, but they have it towards something. Whether it's they love doing wrong, well, that's still an affection toward doing something mischievous. But everyone, it's a necessity. It's an open hold in the heart of man that needs to be filled. And if you don't fill it with the right things, the wrong things will come into it. 2 Timothy, let's turn over there in chapter 3. 2 Timothy. Second Timothy 3, verse 1, and this know also that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good. But among the wicked, abominable things that are in that list is without natural affection. So like I said, it's not that God took that away. It's that they just changed what their affections were laid on. In Romans, I'm going to turn there real quick. I was going to write this down. I forgot to, can't quite quote it. But in Romans 1, I'll just read it. Verse 26, talking about the abominations in Romans 1. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affection. Once again, he didn't take the affection away. He just gave them over to a different affection. And so that's why I say everyone in this room has affection towards something. It's not that God just takes love out of your heart and takes that affection. It says that if you're not going to have it toward me, it's going to change and it's going to be unnatural. I don't want to get off on it, but you know, with the abortion, that is an unnatural affection or lack thereof. And it's not that they just don't have any affection. It's that they have it on the wrong things. They have affection toward themselves, if anything else. And same goes with between you and God. You can say that I just don't have any affection. No, you love something. It's just not the right thing, possibly. So not only is it yours to control and yours to set on things above, but also it's a necessity. You will have affection and love something or someone. Matthew 12, let's keep going with this thought here. Matthew 12. Verse 43, Matthew 12:43. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through a dry place, seeking rest, and findeth none. Then he saith, this is the unclean spirit talking, I will return into my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he and taketh with himself 7 other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. Even so shall it be also unto this wicked generation. So that's the evil spirit talking. He says he gets cast out of this man. He comes back to this vessel, this man that he was possessed, and he notices that there's a void there. And it hasn't been filled with anything. It's swept and garnished. So he says, man, there's room for more of us. So he gets out. goes gets some more spirits, more wicked than himself, and comes back into that same man that just got rid of the devils. It says the last state of that man was worse than the first. It's great that you get rid of some sin. It's great that you kick some bad habit. But now there's this void. There's this emptiness of affection that needs to be filled with something. And so if you stop loving the wrong things, if you don't fill that with the love of God and have your affection on things above, that other stuff will sneak back in. In fact, more fold will come into that, and more downward progression will go towards it because it hasn't been filled. There's this empty void that God has created in every human being to be filled with some sort of affection. And if you have a vile affection or like a conscience that is seared and you get rid of something, if you don't fill that with the right things, the right substitutes for that, it will get filled back again. It's kind of like when you get your tooth drilled out. They drill it out, but they don't leave a void there. They fill it in with something so that nothing else gets in there. I don't even like talking about that, but that maybe that's not the best illustration, but you get the concept that there needs to be something in its place so that nothing else gets in there. It's to protect you from infection. And so you get some sin out of your life, there's going to be this void, and you need to fill it with the right things. That's why I think it's so important to have good music around the house or wherever you listen to it, because just because you don't listen to the wrong stuff, naturally, there's going to be this void in there, and you need to fill it with the right stuff. Otherwise, the wrong stuff is going to seep its way in there. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians. Chapter 1 and verse 9. Now, this is the opposite. I mean, we've been talking so far about someone getting rid of sin, having a void and filling it with the wrong stuff. But look what Paul says here. 1 Thessalonians 1, 9. For they themselves show of us what manner of entering in we had unto you, and how ye turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. So here's people that did have idols in their heart, and they had it, and they took the void out, and they turned to God and filled it with the things of God. So that's rare. Normally we think about someone that no longer has a love for the Lord, so then they just fill themselves with the junk of this world. But here, so he said, you turned to God from idols. You had it, the idols in your heart, and you took it out, and that void was instantly filled with the love of God. And so that's what needs to happen. If you turn to God, if you turn away from idols, it needs to be towards something that's good, and you need to fill that void. So affection is not just yours to control, but it's also a necessity. Now let's go to Galatians chapter 5. Galatians 5. And this is going to be right after the two verses of the fruit of the Spirit. But verse 24, Galatians 5, 24. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. That's not a very common verse, but I've been dwelling on that, and there's a lot in there. I mean, if you're Christ, it says you crucified the flesh. You crucified the flesh with the affections and lust. So the affections is going to take some sacrifice. No one likes to crucify themselves, but if you're going to have affection towards something, you're giving it up for something else that you maybe naturally love. For you to follow Christ, you may need to leave some stuff aside that is not necessarily wrong, but that you just have a love for. And so you have that verse saying that, look, if you're Christ, you've crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. Now, lust is often spoken of a bad, but affection in and of itself is not wrong. It's just something that's naturally in man that you need to control. But you have to admit that verse is saying, if you're going to be crucified with that, that affection is going to have to go through some sacrifice. For 2 Samuel 24. Now, this is David. David has sinned grievously. And in the end of the book of 2 Samuel, David's trying to make things right with the Lord. And he wants his fellowship back. And so he goes to Ornan's threshing floor and wants to make a sacrifice. And once again, it is a sacrifice. In verse 24, and the king said unto him, in verses 22 and 23, he asks him of the threshing floor, and he says, look, I'll give it to you for free. You're the king. I'm not going to charge you for this. But look at the end of, verse 24, but I will surely buy it of thee at a price. Neither will I offer burnt offerings unto the Lord my God of that which doth cost me nothing. He says, look, I understand the way the Lord works, and the Lord likes a sacrifice. And so it's not that it's just that I'm sacrificing by literally making this, putting this sheep on the altar, but I'm not going to do anything for the Lord unless it costs me something. If you just give it to me, that's not a sacrifice. Well, sacrifice and love go hand in hand. And what I've noticed about sacrifice is the more love and affection you have towards someone, the less it seems like an actual sacrifice. For the Lord to have your life and to have everything in it, the more you love the Lord, the less it seems like a sacrifice. If you don't have that affection toward God, then, I mean, something as little as putting money in the offering plate. Pastor's not here, so I'll hit it, all right? Pastor's not supposed to speak about tithing, but he's not here, so I'll talk about it. The more affection you have to the Lord, that $20 bill looks so big in the offering plate, but so small at the grocery store. Why? Affection. Do you love the Lord? I'm not trying to squeeze pennies out of you. What I'm saying is, I'm not going to read all of it, but in Mark 12, when he goes, the famous story where that lady gives the two mites, what it says about the Lord should be acknowledged by all who read it. It says that Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast in the money. He didn't say to see how much they cast in the money. He said, how do you cast in the money? And thankfully, a long time ago, I used to look at that, you know, whatever you want to give, I'm not going to put a number on it, but what you give to the Lord back from what the Lord has given you, I used to look at that as almost a bill. And it was just something that, oh yeah, I need to set this much aside. Oh, I forgot to pay my tithe, you know. It's one of those checkmark things that, ugh, I forgot about that. And that's how I used to look at it. And I'll say this, everything changed when I stopped looking at it that way and thought of it as an offering, something that I'm giving to the Lord. And it's a pleasure to be able to, and it's not so much a sacrifice anymore because of the affection that goes along with it. If you look at it with love and how much he's done for you, and it should be no burden. So like I say, the closer you are and the more you love someone, that's not really even a sacrifice, especially in America. And I get it. I'm not trying to tell you to bankrupt your household and all that and, you know, give more than you financially can. But what I am saying is, if you love the Lord, the more you love the Lord, I should say, the less of an actual sacrifice it's going to feel like. And I'll say this, during that time where the Lord was dealing with me about that, I'll be honest, I didn't change the dollar amount. I just changed how I gave that. It wasn't that the Lord was asking more of me. He didn't appreciate the attitude going into it. You know, when you sign the checks, it's like, I'm not going to get that thing this week because I have to go to the grocery store and here's my tithe. Whereas the Lord loves a cheerful giver. Because, I think that was prayed this morning, the Lord loves a cheerful giver because he understands it is a sacrifice, but it takes the edge off when you love someone. I am much more willing to make a sacrifice for my wife than anyone else in this room. Why? Affection. It doesn't seem like a sacrifice to go to work and pay all my kids and her bills and buy them clothes because I love them. I don't look at work as a sacrifice. Now, if I have to go to work for you and pay your bills, I look at that as a sacrifice because I don't have the same affection toward you that I have toward my own family. That's natural. What I'm saying is how you have affection towards someone affects your sacrifice, but affection will take sacrifice. Galatians 2, and in fact, I'll just quote this one. I believe that's Galatians 2:20 says, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And know what's interesting about that is that verse says, I am crucified. Now we understand we're in type, we're crucified, dead and buried and risen again with Christ in him. But that says present tense, I am crucified with Christ. Meaning that there's a continual sacrifice, not for salvation, but for fellowship that needs to go on. And what's interesting is the new version has all changed that to past tenses. I have been crucified or something like that. You're taking away the current sacrifice that needs to take place. And that takes away from the affections as well. Let's go to Romans 12. You know, it'd be a good idea. We often, when we go to the altar, you think about maybe some sin or something that you lay down before the Lord and say, Lord, here's this, here's my time, here's all this. And it wouldn't be a bad idea to sometime come down or maybe at your own place at your house where you pray and just lay everything out before the Lord and say, along with all my finances, along with the things that I love to do, I want to bring, here's my affection. The things that I have a preference towards that aren't even wrong. Here's my family. Here's my music. Here's everything that I personally love. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with any of that. And maybe there is something wrong that you do need to. But a lot of times, the people that are trying to please the Lord, their affections aren't necessarily wrong. It's just they're not quite on things above. They're on things of this earth. And so it wouldn't be a bad idea for you to come to the altar, wherever that is, and just, here's my affection. Here's my love. Here's everything that I desire to do. But it's at the altar, and if you want it to go up in flames, take it. But it's not a bad idea to lay your affections at the altar. Romans 12, we'll start in verse 9. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectionate one to another, with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another, not slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Affection is going to take a bit of selflessness. It's very easy for mankind to look inward on all his problems. I find it funny that, and it's not really funny, it's sad that the lessons that we teach the kids, and I say we, if you're a parent, you teach your kids, if they're in the back, they teach them simple lessons, and you grow up and you think that those are kid lessons. And they're not. They're just so basic that you would think by the time you grow up that you would have those under control. But I think it would be a good review class to go through and have some of the teachers back there come up and teach the adults some things, and myself included, that some things that you forget that should be very common knowledge but very ill-practiced among adults. And I think I'm an adult, so I'll include myself in that as well. But Matthew 7, verse 12. Therefore, all things whatsoever we would that men should do to you, do ye also, do ye even so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. This is one of the verses that they take the golden rule from, you know, that little kids are supposed to know, do unto others as they would have them do unto you. And it's biblical. It's a biblical precept. And yet, you know, you get on your kids, and I'll use myself as an example, and, you know, would you want your sister to do that to you? I say sister because I don't have any sons, so. Would you want that sister, you know, your sister to do that to you? Well, then don't do it to her. And do unto others you would have them do unto you, you know, drill it into them. And that can be preached just as well to someone in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, as high up as you want to go. You don't graduate from that. No matter how accomplished you are in your Christian life, you never graduate from having selfish motives. And that's something you can work on till the day you die, is having your eyes not just on other people, but for the Lord's sake. And for, in the passage we read, he says you're doing that so you can serve the Lord, is to have your affections set, be kindly affectionate one toward another. And so it's going to take selflessness. Now let me ask you this. I've been hit with this a lot lately just because of there's some heavy prayer requests going around. With the Campbell family and a couple other things, is once again, not do you pray, just like how much do you give, but how do you pray and how do you give? And let's go to Hebrews 13, because I think I said this in teen class because I want people to pray for me if I have something heavy on my heart. And I do. And I understand that you can't be loaded down with everyone's cares and concerns, but to an extent, this passage may change the way that you pray and should. Hebrews 13, verse 1, let brotherly love continue, be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Remember them that are in bonds as being in bonds with them, and them that suffer adversity as being yourself also in the body. Like I said, you can't put yourself in everyone's positions and constantly be bogging yourself down with thinking about if I had lost my spouse, like Mrs. Campbell lost Brother Campbell. You can't constantly be bogged down and depressed. But in prayer, imagine yourselves as going through that with them. And that would change the way you pray. Not that you pray, but not just going through a list, but imagine yourself going through that specific thing. That'll change how you pray. What is that? That's affection one toward another. It's a selflessness that goes along with that affection. And so I just ask you, how do you pray for your brethren? And I get convicted when I see it, is I feel awkward if I go into a room where people are taking prayer requests and I raise my hand to ask someone to pray for me, but I'm not writing other people's prayer requests down. I find that strange that I'm asking someone to pray for me and there's a burden on my heart. Well, that's great and I'm fine with that, but then I'm not concerned enough to pray for what you have to say. And so I try not, if I don't have a list, I don't give out prayer requests, and that's up to you. I'm just saying you're supposed to be kindly affectionate one toward another, and you're supposed to pray for them as being in bonds with them or going through a certain trial as though you were in that trial. And if I were to give a request, I would love to see every head go down and write that and know that everyone in the room is at least trying to make an effort to pray for me that week. I would like to think that. But sadly, I don't think that's the case. But for me personally, I'm supposed to be, when I hear that, I'm supposed to be thinking, if I were given that request, what reaction would I want from other people? Well, that's the reaction I should get, is I earnestly want to pray for you. And that, like I said, that will change how you pray. But let's go to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5. Verse 28. So ought men to love their wives and as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it and cherisheth it, even as the Lord, the church. The Lord's the only one that followed through in that commandment. There's not a man in this room that every single day of his life cherished his wife the way that he cherished his own body. But it's something to strive for. The example he gives is Christ in the church. I don't have to tell my little girls to love themselves. I've never had to convince myself that I need to be affectionate toward myself. You are affectionate toward yourself. That is human nature. What you have to be told is to be selfless. Humility, selflessness, is not a natural act. It's something that you have to strive for. I've never had to teach my kids to want their own toys back, because they want their own toys back. It's theirs. And when I was little, my parents never taught me that I was more important than my siblings. I just knew that. I knew I was more important than my siblings. That was ingrained into me from the womb. And foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. But you don't have to train someone to love themselves. This modern age is completely messed up with that. You don't have to train a kid to love himself. Are you crazy? I won't get off on that. But true affection is going to require selflessness, because you are naturally going to turn every sort of affection, and every affection that you have has to do with yourself. Why do I have an affection toward music or my family? Because I enjoy that. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, but if you're not careful, you'll turn out to, that's my affection because that's what I love. Okay, but what about your brethren? What about their wants and their prayer requests? It's going to require selflessness in order to have the right affection on things above and not on things of this earth. Let's go back to Matthew 6. Matthew 6. And all this is more informative, but you may ask, you know, well, how do I control my affections? You've been saying this whole time that it's up to me to control where my affections lie. Well, how am I supposed to get my affections on things above and not on things of this earth? Do I just try really hard and strain until I just want to love with, do I read the Bible? Well, what? How do I get my affection on things above? Well, I'm glad you asked. Matthew 6, and we'll start in verse 19. Lay up for yourselves treasures and lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. You want to know, how do I get my heart and my affection on things above? Lay up treasure. The more treasure you have down here, and the more affection you're going to have down here. The more you labor for the Lord and try to store up a good foundation and the crowns and rewards in heaven, your heart will naturally follow that. You don't have to tell your heart where the treasure is. Your heart knows exactly where the treasure is. If you follow your heart, it will find the treasure. And so if your heart is constantly on this world, well, then that's where your treasure is. You haven't been laying up for yourself a good foundation. You haven't been storing those things up in heaven and laying up treasures up in heaven. And I know that because of verse 21, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Your heart will follow. You don't have to train your heart. You actually have to train you have to train your heart in that the labor that you do for the Lord will then affect how your heart follows behind. And the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. So you need to guide that heart as much as you can. Now, Proverbs 16 really helped me. If you go to Proverbs 16, we're almost done turning this morning. Proverbs 16. And growing up, you know, I often struggled with my thoughts. And I never thought spiritual thoughts. And I still struggle with that. No one is naturally spiritual. And so you always are conscious of trying to think about spiritual things. And how do I just poof, think about spiritual things? It's hard to train without knowing how to train for it. And this is one that Pastor gave me when I was, I don't know, 14, 15 years old. But chapter 16, verse 3, commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. Well, how do I get my thoughts in the right place? Well, work for the Lord. I don't know if you notice this, but a lot of times, for me personally, if we have something at work that we're not sure how to figure out, we need to figure out some layout or something, and we're doing it, we're laboring, I'm thinking about that thing until it's solved. I mean, I'm going to bed, I sometimes have dreams about it, and I'm thinking about it. Why? Because that's what I'm laboring. What you do during the day is naturally what your mind is going to be consumed upon. And so when people have, you know, they say, oh, I slipped in my speech, you know, just, oops, slipped out. Well, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Why? Because what is going into the body is eventually going to find its way out. And so your heart just doesn't all of a sudden, I know you're laboring for the Lord, but I'm going to go this way. No, whatever you're doing for or against for the Lord, for the Lord or for your flesh, that heart is just going to naturally follow. So for you to set your affection on things above, you're going to have to labor and work for the Lord, and that heart and your thoughts will just naturally have to fall in place. You say, you're saying that my heart is going to want to please the Lord. If you're laboring for him, then you're putting up treasure, that's according to the Bible, that your heart is naturally going to follow behind that. But the problem is, you have to labor. You have to put in the work. And so affection also involves you working for the Lord. Where do you spend your time? And, you know, like I said, with my thoughts, if I have just carnal thoughts all day long, I go back and, man, what have I been doing with my time? What have I been spending my time, the free time that I have? Am I just wasting it, or am I actually doing something with it? And what you do with that time is going to affect how you think and how you lay up treasure. And then by proxy is how your heart is going to then go. And that will help you set your affection on things above. and not on things of this earth. So what you do affects how you think. If I labor for the Lord and lay up treasure, the heart issue will be a lot easier to control if you labor. And like I said, that it seems backwards, because I used to always think, get my mind right, get all my sins confessed, which is good. But then once my mindset is there, then I'll labor. No, he says, go into my field and reap the harvest. Try to do something for the Lord. Your mind will naturally be thinking about what you just did. And so it's completely opposite of the way we naturally think. Now, let's go to Exodus 21. And last off, I just want to say that we talk about this, and I'm trying to be a little more sobering with this. And you say, well, why is my affection so important? Why does it matter so much that my affection is in the right place? Let's go to Exodus 21. And before we read the passage, I'll just tell you, your affections determine your decisions. Every decision that you make is determined by what you love and what you have affection toward. I've heard this, if you want to get to know somebody, don't ask them, you know, what their favorite color is, what they like to drive. If you know what someone loves and what they fear, you know the person. That is the person. And you can pretend to be a lot of things. You can have, you know, a bit different body types. You can like different foods. You can be allergic to something. But that's not really you. If you want to get down to what you are, it's what you love and what you fear. And so no decision in life, no major decision will be made without consulting love and fear. And so if you want to, the reason why affection is so important is because it guides the decisions that you make in life. So you better make sure you have your affections in the right place. Exodus 21, verse 1. Now these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them. If thou buy a Hebrew servant, 6 years shall he serve, and the seventh he shall go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master have given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her masters. Be her masters, and he shall go out by himself. And if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife and my children, I will not go out free. Then his master shall bring him unto the judges, and he shall also bring him to the door, or unto the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. What would cause someone who is in servitude to a master to continue to servitude? Here's a person, and the chains are finally off. I don't know if he was chained, but I mean, here's someone that has been serving this master. Everything that he's done in the past has not been for his own benefit, and finally he has an opportunity to go free. Here's this decision you have a decision to either go free or but you're going to have to leave me, you're going to have to leave your wife and kids. What would cause a servant to not go out free and to have the master take him to the door and drive an awl through his ear and serve him forever? Affection, love will cause service. And so a decision had to be made by that servant, and it was not made because of, you know, something he read or some moral thing. It was just, that's where his affections were. And if his affections were not toward that master and not toward his family, then the decision would be made I'm going to go out free. But the decision was made based on love. And so the decisions that you make are going to be based on love. It's whether you recognize it or not, whether you serve the Lord or not, it's going to be on whether you love him, whether you love yourself, and it's all based on affection. But you're supposed to set your affection on things above and not on things of this earth. Let's pray. Father,